Good morning, everyone. I was thinking of whatever I could say to Mike, but my wife reminded me that he gets to go back up there, so I guess I'll skip that this time. So that's different. Well, I had a different message planned most of this week, had most of it completed, and then I saw something this week that, I don't know, it kind of triggered. He used the word triggered, but this one actually did kind of trigger me. Something that happened this week, and it changed my focus a little bit. So I want to go into that today. First thing I'd like to say is that there's been no time in history that we've had it easier to spread our message. The last 90 years has been so much easier than any other time in history. Just give you an idea of how long this has been. 1455, we know this is Gutenberg's printing press, first time that you could copy and duplicate words and pages for mass production. At that time, the first thing ever printed was actually the Gutenberg Bible, and it was printed in Latin. So most people at that time, if you consider you didn't even have access to a Bible, most people couldn't exactly read Latin, not likely. By 1539, this is where everything changes. 1539, the first English language Bible is printed, and it's for public use. So now, for the first time, people using the English language can actually read the Bible, have it at home. To think that that's the time right before this country was even really attempt to colonize it. So this is, 400 years ago, 500 years ago that this occurred? But in the last 90 years, look at how easy it's been to spread this message. The first mass communication really would have been radio. When you think about, and I hear about my dad when he talked about when they were little, that if you had a radio, you'd gather around it on Friday night, Saturday night, whatever, listen to. I think with them it was baseball, boxing matches, and things like that. But it was the first time that we saw it used to also spread the gospel. Worldwide, Mr. Armstrong, it was not the worldwide church of God, it was radio church of God at first. But this message, we able to get it to mass audiences, not just tent revivals. You could have people all over the world, not just come to one area, but you could listen everywhere. Well, after a while, around the 50s, 60s, television became much more prevalent for people. Television, I remember staying at Mr. Keller's. I was probably, 16. We were probably headed to camp the next day. And right before we left, I remember him just screaming, "Everybody come downstairs." And I'm like, "What in the world?" And because the broadcast was on. So he was making sure everyone saw the broadcast. But it opened another avenue for people to spread the gospel. Now, and I was thinking on the way up here, because I know for the most part my family, they don't even have cable television. Who actually does not have cable television right now? All right. A lot of younger people don't. I remember when we got cable, I thought this was the greatest thing in the world. But it's almost become obsolete at this point. Because if you tried to just focus on television to spread our gospel, you wouldn't be effective. So now everyone's gone online. It's gone to internet streaming, to posting on different pages, YouTube, and things like that. They've gone to that now. Now, what's down the road? I don't know. There'll be something that's going to come up next. But it's been so easy to get the message across. And I remember talking to a guy a few years ago when you think, click of a button, I can have any information in the world. And he had given a sermon about Amos 8. And let's go there, because it doesn't make sense given how easy access to information is today. But Amos 8, we're going to look at verses 11 and 12. Hosea, Joel, Amos, that's not one we always go to. Thank Janie for making me, when I was a little kid, memorize the books of the Bible. I still remember that from back then. So she actually was a good teacher, I guess. But Amos 8, verses 11 and 12. And it really doesn't make sense when you look at where we are right now. Amos 8, verse 11, it said, "Behold, the days are coming, says the Lord God, that I will send a famine on the land, not a famine of bread, not a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of the Lord." Now, this guy said something that I really did not necessarily agree with. He said, well, that's kind of a mistranslation. What it means is that no one's going to listen to it. And I thought, well, maybe he's right. But then look at the next verse, because there are people looking. Verse 12 says, "They shall wander from sea to sea, and from north to east. They shall run to and fro, seeking the word of the Lord, but shall not find it." So there are people that will be looking. They're looking, but it says they won't find it. So it makes me think, no, it's not really that, because we've always had that. Very few people. How many people actually know the real truth? There aren't that many around. But this is something where you're not going to find it. Again, how does this seem possible when we have all of this access that we have today? We have access, two clicks and you're somewhere where you can find anything you want. You can find the truth. I don't know, but after COVID and after all of this stuff that's been going on politically in the country, there are some things that I thought about that, well, it makes more sense now. To me, and again, this is all, when we're talking prophecy, hey, you're flipping a coin anyway. But these are ways that when we think about information is too easy, these are a few ways that, hey, this can be shut down pretty quickly. This can be shut down pretty quickly. So I have four things that I looked at and thought, okay, this is a possibility. And the first one, and this is that story that I saw this week that really made me think about this. And the first point or possibility is it will be illegal to speak the truth. First point, it will be illegal to speak the truth. And I was thinking, my wife and I are about to have our 30th anniversary, and right around the time we got married, or a year later, I guess, the whole don't ask, don't tell policy in the military came out. And everyone kind of stood against it at that point, saying, no, we don't go for that. 30 years later, where are we? Where are we? We just had a Supreme Court justice that during her hearing couldn't define what a woman was. We've gone from people standing against it to now we don't even know where genders are. These are our leaders. Didn't take long. And if you speak against it, hey, you want to lose your job, and it's going to continue to go that way? Very strong possibility. But what hit me was this story this week. And I read it and thought, that can't be right. But the House this week, House of Representatives, passed a law that stunned me. And it's not a law that the fact that it was passed, it stunned me that it was so close. This is a law that if during an abortion, which we know where we stand on that, but take it a whole lot further here, a baby is accidentally removed from the womb while still alive. This is during an abortion process. If it's removed while still alive, they had to pass a law saying that that baby should be given the rights of any other human being. how is there a need for a law like this? And what shocked me was this passed by a vote of 220 to 210. It passed by 10 votes that a baby can be taken care of. One representative said something. I thought, this is unbelievable. She said, this is extremist, it's dangerous, and completely unnecessary. A law like this, the fact that we have to pass a law like this is extremist, dangerous, and unnecessary. But this woman threw a fit that passed a law like this. One way is this speaking the truth can be outlawed. This is where we are. Now, we're not there yet. They didn't say, oh, you can go kill that baby. But 30 years ago, we were so far removed from this that we couldn't even fathom this. In Canada, and we know once this door's opened, it continues. You open that door a little bit, that door's coming open. But in Canada, right now, they're going through a process that will do away with all religions. And they said, and it barely failed, but they said they'll bring it up again. But they said that accrediting any distinctly religious organization would violate the Canadian Charter, which is their version of our Bill of Rights. That accrediting any distinctly religious organization would violate the Canadian Charter. It added that when the government licenses a private organization, it adopts all of the policies as its own. So what they're arguing is that any religion, they just will not accredit any religions at this point, because that means they're going to be adopting those principles if they even give them recognition. It's not here, but it's not that far away. But if it does, it's going to be the end of Canada's nonprofit sector or any religious aspects up there. And we already know that if you speak certain words in Canada, you will be fined. You can even face jail time for that. Not that far away, are we? Let's look at Isaiah 5. Isaiah 5. We think how far we've come in the last few years. Isaiah 5, verses 20 through 24. It says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. It's where we are. Verse 21, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. This is going to be another point in a minute that this is where we are now. Verse 22, woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine and champions at mixing drinks. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah. They were out having a good time. Days of Noah, out having a good time. And it's gone. Verse 23, who acquit the guilty for a bribe but deny justice to the innocent. Therefore, as tongues of fire lick up straw and as dry grass sinks down in the flames, so their roots will decay and their flowers blow away like dust, for they have rejected the law of the Lord Almighty. Some people like to say this country is based on religious principles, and yes, they did use some, but this country has never been based on religious principles the way that we know them, like that. There's just no way. Did God possibly bless this country? Yes, but this country, when we look at everything that's gone on, this is not a country, oh, we stand for God. And now we've gone so far away from that that I certainly do not think that the disciples or any of those people in the Old Testament would recognize this as a country of God. Just don't think they would. But when we think about also removing making it illegal. Until COVID came and we're sitting there, it was hard to picture this because everything's out there. But how easily have we seen in the last few years, if you have an opposing viewpoint, that that viewpoint can be removed, shut down, and you won't find it anymore? It's becoming easier and easier because of just the way this country's going. If you don't fit the right bill, then your words can be shut down. And that's not a political thing. This is going into a religious aspect of where can this go? Because this can go into a big, big problem for us, but hey, if this is true, then this is where we're headed. The second possibility is people simply won't have an interest. People simply will not have an interest. And I think it's going to be a combination of all of these things. Because in 1937, Gallup did its first religious poll. And in 1937, Gallup asked how many people went to church on a regular basis. And we're talking, for the most part, Sunday, but any type of church, what Gallup used, because they mentioned temples and everything, but any church. And in 1937, 73% of people in the United States went to church on a regular basis. And it remained near 70% for six more decades. So we're talking 1990s. And then around the turn of the century, something happened. Something happened, and we are, since 2021, we are now below 50% of people that attend church. Below 50% for the first time since these polls came about. There's a reason for that. And this other group, I can't remember, it's like Focus on the Family type of group. I didn't cite it here, but they looked into family issues and why families go to church, because let's face it, we all know that in any church, the young people are leaving at a higher rate than they ever have. But they looked into, really broke down the family dynamics here. And here's what they found. When both parents attended church, 72% of the children attend church when they're grown. When only the father attends church, 55% of the children attend. When only the mother attends church, 15% of the children attend when grown. When neither parent attends church, only 6% of the children attend when grown. Now, this also ties into the breakdown of the family. When the father's not there, when the father's not around, you see 55%. If the father's going to church, 55%. But when it's just the mother, and let's face it, when there are these situations, most of the time the mother has the child, 15%. This is a big difference. Breakdown in family, you see these issues. And again, these aren't churches that we say, oh, they're doing what's right. But we see that they are following in the footsteps of what their parents are attempting to do. The fewer that are interested, and let's face it, as we see more and more people, divorce rates higher, the fewer people that there are even going to be to pass this message on. If we continue to lose, because we know all the churches, everyone's getting old, we're going to start losing more and more people, and there's no way to get this message out there. How do you get the message out when there's no interest on one side, you only have very few people that are remaining? Who's going to give the message? So I think that's going to be a problem, is that just the lack of interest. Take this two generations down, where's it going to go with these numbers that are continuing? We've got some real issues with even having this message out there anymore. A third point is too many people will be self-absorbed. Too many people will be self-absorbed. And this has always been a case. Look at Absalom in the Bible. look at people, but it's growing at an unbelievable rate at this point. There's a journalist, her name is Laura Hayes, and what they found is there's an extreme rise in narcissism among young people, even down to 10, 11 years old, where everything's about them. No one else, no regard for anyone, it's all about them. And she looked into this and got very deep into it. And here's what she says. She says, recent studies are showing that we are living in an increasingly narcissistic society, and there's no going back. She said, this is a society where primetime television is dominated by reality shows as fake as the Kardashians, where people would rather take a million photos of the concert they're in or the coffee they're drinking than actually enjoy it. But this should not come as a surprise. She goes on and says, but what's more concerning is that new studies contrasting life goals and habits of young people with those of baby boomers. So this is many of you a little bit older than I am. But they're comparing that with some of the young people. It's not the young people's fault. It's society at this point. But it said the generation born from 1946 to 1964 said this new group display an increase in extrinsic values rather than intrinsic ones. Younger generations are much more likely to value appearance, fame, and money over self-acceptance and fellowship. But it's not really, look at the social media stuff. Look at the filters you could put on your phone to make yourself look good, or the idea of showing the perfect part of your life. This is what's going good. They don't show the times when it's absolutely terrible, do they? But it's all giving people the idea of, oh, this is not good at my life. But it showed that, what is that? You probably know this. Is it dopamine that makes you feel good? I think it's dopamine. So they said that when they did some studies on people, that every like that someone got on a social media page was like a small bit of dopamine. It gave them this upper feeling to make them feel good. This is a big problem right now. When they're more worried about appearance, about fame, when I ask the kids in my classes, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? Even now, it's been the last 4 or 5 years. Now it's, I want to be a TikTok star or something like that, but it started with YouTube and all this stuff. It continues every year. There's no other focus for 50, 60% of these kids. And many of them that don't say that, they're going to play video games, these e-games, and make a fortune that way. It's changed. Is it their fault? Not necessarily. I mean, you can blame parents on that. But this whole social media, they're worried to death that this has created an entire generation of narcissists who are only going to focus on themselves and no one else. Got a real problem there. Because she goes on, she says, people with narcissistic personalities need admiration and attention from others. They thrive on easy-to-obtain social media endorsements such as followers, likes, shares, and retweets. It's so important to get that gratification to people. And it's a little worrisome, though. Where's that going? You know, this is kind of first-generation stuff here, so we don't even know where this is going right now. Let's look at 2 Timothy 3. I think we're there. 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 4. It says, but mark this. There will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Everything that woman just said, that's in here, where she looked at the deep down into the study, and this is where we're headed. This is where we're headed. Now, when you break it down, you want to say, oh, let's blame the kids. No, it's not that, because it's obvious here. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Kids are kids. You raise them, they're just kids. It's society itself. It's, yeah, parents let them down. But society itself breaking down. And, hey, if prophecy's true, then it's supposed to. Then it's supposed to, and it means we're closer to the end time. The fourth way, and this is going to be on us. This is on us, is complacency. Church attendance all around the world, doesn't matter if it's our church, whatever it is, but it's always been better during rough times. People look towards God. It's easy to think I can do it myself when things are good. But people need God, and they start looking when times are rough. Now, we know at the end time it's going to be brutal. It's going to be like no time ever. But the time leading up to it, if we're there, it's pretty good right now, isn't it? But if we choose to take it easy right now and we don't do our own jobs, we don't do what we're supposed to and not get the message out, well, when it's time, it's not going to be there because we haven't done our job. We need to get it out now, and we need to do it ourselves. We need to show, because let's face it, all throughout history, there hasn't been a minister there for many of the people that have tried to follow God's way. What are we going to do if there's no minister? Are we going to say, oh, well, we're good. We don't have one, so we can't do it. Let's look at John 4 real quickly. John 4, verse 35. John 4, verse 35 says, don't you have a saying, it's still 4 months until harvest. I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. Once again, what if there's no minister here? Do we just step aside and say, well, I guess it's over? Because if we hadn't had the worldwide split, if we hadn't had United splits also, I know I wouldn't be up here. I'd be sitting in the back saying, please don't ask me to do a prayer because I don't want to speak. But at some point, we're all going to have to do our share. It doesn't mean you have to be up here speaking. But when someone sees you, when they see the example you set, do they say, that's what I want? Because that person's the right example? Is that shining light on the hill? Or do they see you and say, yeah, he plays church, but he can drink better than anyone else I know? Is that where we are? Quite honestly, there are a whole lot of people in the world that put us to shame as far as what their actions and deeds, aren't there, that really go all out to help other people. We've got to let our light shine. And we may not be out there pounding, saying, repent and all of that, because that's not our gifts, so to speak. But we need to be out there where other people see the example that we have. The example that we have. And if you could speak and you have the opportunity to teach people, hey, that's our job. He said, go preach to the world. That's to every one of us. That's not just to a certain group of people who we call ministers. It's to every one of us. If we're going to sit in here, then we have to be this way 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not just these 2 hours here, get back out and do what we want to. Let's look at one final scripture, because he did tell us to do something, and it's prophecy, or one final passage, I guess. It's Isaiah 55. Verse 6 and the first part of verse 7. Isaiah 55, verse 6, and the first part of verse 7. Right now, it's easy to find the word and our truth. It won't always be that way. But he tells us right here, what do we need to do? This is what we need to do. It says, seek the Lord while he may be found. Because as it says, it's not always going to be there. Call on him while he is near. And that means we need to be very close to God. And if we're close to God, then other people will see these lights that we are setting. And verse 7, get away from all this mess that we see. Stand up. Because verse 7 said, let the wicked forsake their ways and the unrighteous their thoughts. But we're not going to be around this. We have to stand up. At some point, if we don't stand up, then no one does. And we're at the point right now where no one can even tell you what a woman is. Where 30 years ago, we'd have thought that was a joke. That was a Saturday Night Live skit. And now we're there with our leaders of the country. So, brethren, there is going to be a famine of the word, but we do know that we have our job to do, and each and every one of us will do it to the best of our ability.